Elliot joins us now from Hockey Night in Canada. And Elliot, we'll start with Rafi Torres. As we await a suspension, the in-person hearing is done. The Kings and the Sharks play Game 2 tonight in Los Angeles. So we don't know when exactly it's going to come down, but it'll be sometime today. Do you have any feeling whatsoever as to what the NHL is going to hand out suspension-wise to Torres?
It sounds like a couple. I just don't think they would haul him all the way across the country for a hearing if they didn't have a plan to give him something. So I'm thinking a couple, and it sounds like where we're moving to here, Pat, is if a player gets injured, the question being asked is, did you need to hit him like that? And I guess they're going to argue the answer was no.
Yeah. The whole thing with Torres, I mean, we were talking about this earlier. I mean, the narrative with Matt Cook was that he turned his game around, and then he had the incident with Erik Karlsson. It was a little bit easier to argue incidental or unintentional when it came to the Cook-Karlsson incident. And now Rafi Torres, there was that narrative too. Maybe he had learned his lesson. Maybe he was turning things around, and yet here he is again in hot water.
I think generally he's been a lot better this year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But, you know, here we are right now, and look at the situation. He's got a good buddy of his. Jared Stoll is one of his best friends who's injured. He's going to miss at least a game now, it looks like. And you look at what happened in the first round with Greiba. I didn't think Greiba's hit was dirty at all. And then... But, you know, we saw what happened, and he got two games. So I think that's where we're moving now. I think the standard is, well, maybe not the standard, but the situation is changing, that more and more now we're beginning to ask, what is the responsibility of the hitter in this entire situation, not just the hit-e?
So we shall wait and see what happens when it comes to Rafi Torres and what a suspension is going to be in that respect. Let's move on to games underway on the NHL ice tonight, Elliot, including the start of the second round series between the Bruins and the Rangers. Ryan and I were talking about this earlier. I mean, you have the third best defensive team in the NHL in Boston and the fourth best defensive team in the NHL in New York. I don't think it's all that much of a stretch to sit here and say we might be talking about a defensive struggle.
Yeah, I think that's very safe to say. I think that's a very good pick. And somebody showed me a stat today that Lundqvist has never given up four goals in a game against the Boston Bruins. So there you go with that, too. I still think, you know, the biggest question to me I have with the Rangers, and they found a way to do it at the end of that series, is score enough goals to win. I'm looking at a Boston team, you know, Ferentz is hurt, Seidenberg is hurt, Redden comes into the series far from healthy. They still have that beast on the blue line, but their defense is thin, and that's what got them into trouble in Game 7 against Toronto, Pat. And I just think that, can the Rangers put enough pressure on the Boston Bruins to take advantage of that depleted defense? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is yes, I think they've got a good shot. I think Boston is a slightly better team. I love their depth in scoring, even though they didn't score a ton in the first round. I like them a lot, except that blue line, the way it's banged up, is a big potential problem.
Well, and how much of a worry is it even before that blue line really started to get banged up? And obviously Seidenberg is the biggest loss there, but the Bruins at times looked a little shaky even in that first round series against Toronto before some of these blue line woes started.
There's no question they had trouble with the speed. There's no question at all. Toronto is a really fast team, and I think you could make a really good argument that after Game 1, Toronto was the better team for most of the series until, of course, they collapsed at the end. But I don't know if the Rangers, like, Toronto's an offensive team. They really can score. I don't know if the Rangers have that. I think, you know, Brassard has been a new player since he's been there, and he's added another dimension they didn't have before, and he's a major reason there in round two. But to me, until they can figure out a way to get Nash going, I just can't see the Rangers winning too much more if that guy isn't a factor.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about going into the first round, how awesome it would be for your network and just for the country as a whole if Toronto and Montreal were to play each other. First time since the late 70s they would have met in a playoff series. It hasn't been since 1973 that the Rangers and Bruins have met in a playoff series. It kind of blows your mind when you think about it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it really does, actually. especially you take a look at their teams that are in the playoffs a lot. They're teams that tend to be consistently good, even though the Rangers had a few years where they lost their way. It is a pretty amazing stat, and you know it's going to continue that way because they're going to be in different divisions.
He is Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada, joining us as he always does for Eastside Kia Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Big Show at 2:25. Okay, so the Sens and Penguins get back at it tomorrow. Penguins kind of look to toy with Ottawa in that first game as they would win on home ice. What do the Senators have to do better in Game 2 if they're going to want to have a chance to get a split in Pittsburgh?
Well, number one, they can't take dumb penalties. Pittsburgh killed them on the power play, and I think that the confusing thing, honestly, guys, is that the refereeing standard in the playoffs is all over the map from game to game. I didn't like that Corey Conacher penalty call that was a big one, but it happened, and you've got to be aware of that. That's number one. Number two, you know, it's okay to lose in the playoffs, a game here and a game there. It's not okay to lose and be easy on the other team. And I thought the Senators gave the Penguins a total freebie in game number one. You know, Chris Letang played 28 minutes a night against the Islanders. He played 24. Paul Martin played 27 minutes a night against the Islanders. I think he played 23. Crosby played 17. Malkin played under 16. Not only did you lose a game and give the Penguins a game, but you let them have an easy night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the very least, if you're going to lose, make a team say, oh, I'm going to feel that in game four. And I just think the Senators have to be much, much harder to play against tomorrow.
So you think that there's a possibility that maybe we can see this series a little bit closer than what we saw in game one?
I think the Penguins are a superior team. But I just didn't think that, you know, I just didn't think they made it hard on them. Like, they were tough on Montreal. They weren't tough on Pittsburgh. And the Penguins are a different animal. They're a much, much tougher team than Montreal is. But they didn't make the Penguins really grind for anything. So I would sense that you're going to see the Penguins try that, or the Senators try to be a lot harder on them in Game 2.
Elliot Friedman with us, Hockey Night in Canada, as he joins us every Tuesday and Thursday here on The Big Show. Okay, so the Toronto Maple Leafs have done their locker clean out, and all that post-mortem is done, and obviously that was the biggest sports story in Toronto today. Anything stick out at you from what Dave Nonis or Randy Carlyle or any of the players had to say there following their locker clean out day?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I think that they are really still struggling with how to handle this. Part of it is, we've got to deal with, like Randy Carlyle says, we've got to call the players in the summer and make sure that, you know, that they're dealing with it okay. And Dave Nonis is like, I can't let that affect how I'm going to decide on players, and we've got to move on. I spent some time yesterday talking to Peter Chiarelli and Claude Julien in Boston and how they handled 2010. And that was the year where they were up 3-0 and they lost in 7 games to Philly. And they won the Stanley Cup the next year. And again, I'm not saying the Maple Leafs are going to win the Stanley Cup next year. But I am saying that the Bruins made sure the next year at training camp that it was part of their team bonding, that they talked about it. And Julien had some interesting things to say about it. He said that what we learned was that, and that we had to teach our players, is that we were a bit sensitive, he said, as a group. And it's okay for you to tell a teammate, you know what, you aren't playing that well or you can be better, and that doesn't mean you have to take it personally. And I think that's how the Maple Leafs are going to have to learn from that and say that, okay, we can't run away from this because our media, and that's us, we're going to remind them of everywhere they go, they're going to be asked about it. So they're going to have to learn how to deal with being asked about it. I think that's number one. And number two, and I thought it was really interesting, I thought Carlisle took blame, taking blame for how they played after, I thought was really important because it let the players know that the coach is in it with them. The coach is saying, look, it's not just your fault, it's my fault too. And I thought that was a big, big moment for Carlisle today. To me, the biggest questions are going to be, okay, our Finofen Kessel. They're 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. What are you going to do? Are you going to extend them? Are you going to let them play out their deals? And Finofen really didn't come up today. I kind of kicked myself for that. I'd really like to know how this organization feels about him in particular after this series.
The news coming out today on Alexander Ovechkin played Game 6 and Game 7 with a fracture in his foot. Then he goes over and plays with Russia in the World Championships. The whole thing kind of tough to wrap your head around.
Well, you know, I understand that. The news comes out, and Sergei Kucherov, who's the PR guy for Ottawa, for Washington, sent out a tweet that the doctors said he couldn't do any more damage. Like, you remember 2002, guys. Detroit didn't want Steve Yzerman to play at the Olympics. I mean, his knee was screwed. And if you've read anything about the history or seen the documentary, he had, like, basically a new kind of knee surgery at the time to repair it because of how bad he was. And I remember doing a piece on Pavel Datsyuk last year, and he said to me the most incredible thing he witnessed in his career as a young NHL player was watching Yzerman go out that year on a knee that was so screwed up, and he just played and didn't complain about it. And I think that's what it comes down to. If the player wants to play, the teams can't do anything about it. You know, there was intense pressure on Yzerman to play for Canada. He wanted to play for Canada. He wanted to win that gold. He remembered the pain of 98. And I bet you the pressure that the Russians were exerting on Ovechkin was just the same now, if not worse. We want you to come over. We want you to play. You can't make it any worse. They've got the Olympics next year. I mean, at the end of the day, if Alex Ovechkin was a Canadian and went and played for Canada, I don't even know if this would be a question, so I can't fault them for doing it.
And finally, Canada and Sweden tied 2-2, kind of the latter stages now of overtime in this quarterfinal game. But the big story from a Canadian and NHL perspective. Eric Staal takes that knee-on-knee hit from Alex Edler. I didn't like it. I thought that Edler easily, and I know how fast the game is and all that, Edler could have easily altered course, but he kept right on, and that did not look good for Eric Staal. Didn't like the hit, and I certainly don't like the result.
No, I didn't like it either. I'm with you on that. Edler threw his stick after he was ejected, but I don't know what he's complaining about. Was there intent? No, but it was maybe not. But there was certainly it was reckless. There's no question about it. And the only thing you can say is, my God, I hope that that isn't as bad as it looked. Because, and I saw one of the Carolina writers got in touch with Jim Rutherford, and he said that he's already been called, that they've sent him for an MRI, Staal. And they asked him, do you have any regret in letting Staal play? And he said, no, if a guy is going to play for his country, you can't stop him. But I think this guy, this shows you right now, there's a big fight going on in the Olympics about insurance coverage, guys. Mm-hmm. And this is going to make it, this is going to be a big spotlight on it, because if somebody goes down at the Olympics and the insurance isn't covered, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Elliot, as always, appreciate it. We will talk to you on Tuesday afternoon. Hear you tomorrow on the morning show as well.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.